Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Amdocs fourth quarter 2018 earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode, so if anyone should require assistance during the call, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone to reach an operator. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded. I'd now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Mr. Matt Smith, Head of Investor Relations. Sir, please go ahead.
Thank you, Liz. Before we begin, I would like to point out that during this call, we will discuss certain financial information that is not prepared in accordance with GAAP. The company's management uses this financial information in its internal analysis in order to exclude the effects of acquisitions and other significant items that may have a disproportionate effect in a particular period. Accordingly, management believes that isolating the effects of such events enables management and investors to consistently analyze the critical components and results of operations of the company's business and to have a meaningful comparison to prior periods. For more information regarding our use of non-GAAP financial measures, including reconciliations of these measures, we refer you to today's earnings release, which will also be furnished with the SEC on Form 6K. Also, this call includes information that constitutes forward-looking statements. Although we believe the expectations reflected in such forward-looking statements are based upon reasonable assumptions, we can give no assurance that our expectations will be obtained or that any deviations will not be material. Such statements involve risks and uncertainties that may cause future results to differ from those anticipated. These include, but are not limited to, the effects of general economic conditions and such other risks as discussed in our earnings release today, with greater length in the company's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission, including in our annual report on Form 20F for the fiscal year ended September 30, 2017, filed on December 11, 2017, and our Form 6K furnished for the first quarter of fiscal 2018, on February 12, 2018, the second quarter fiscal 2018 on May 21st, 18, and the third quarter of fiscal 2018 on August 13, 2018. Amdocs may elect to update these forward-looking statements at some point in the future. However, the company specifically disclaims any obligation to do so. Additionally, we are pleased to mention that our analyst and investor briefing will be held on Tuesday, December 11 at the Nasdaq Market site in New York City. Please contact Investor Relations for further details and check our IR website several days in advance for details on how to access the live webcast. Participating on the call with me today are Shuky Sheffer, President and Chief Executive Officer of Amdocs Management Limited, and Tamar Rapaport-Yagin, Chief Financial and Operating Officer. And with that, I'll turn it over to Shuky.
Thanks, Matt, and good afternoon to everyone joining us today. This is my first only call as the new Chief Executive Officer of Amdocs, and I would like to take this moment to thank Eli for his support in making this a smooth transition. I assumed the position of CEO of October 1st, and I'm very excited by the opportunity to lead Amdocs forward in fiscal 2019 and beyond. I'll talk more about the outlook for the coming year later in my remarks, but let me begin with a brief recap of our performance in Q4 and in fiscal year 2018, both of which were solid and in line with our expectations. Q4 revenue was slightly above the midpoint of our guidance and includes your best quarter in more than a decade. Operating profitability was stable and our sales momentum was healthy as we continued to win significant new project and managed services awards. Regarding fiscal 2018, I'm pleased to say that we achieved our total revenue growth targets on the year. Our performance included a revenue decline at AT&T of 15% as this last customer re-evaluated its spending priorities around Time Warner and the evolving requirements of core business. Nevertheless, we more than offset this headwind as a result of our strong progress with new and existing customers in the broader North America, Europe, and rest of the world. Moreover, we grew total revenue for the year while maintaining consistent execution, closing several strategic acquisitions, and meeting our commitment to return roughly 100% of normalized free cash flow to shareholders. Altogether, we delivered full-year diluted non-GAAP earnings per share growth of 6.1% in fiscal 2018. In line with the midpoint of our guidance range of 4% to 8% that we published last November. Now, let me provide some follow in regards to original business activities in Q4 and the market dynamic we expect to see in the coming year. Beginning in North America, sequential revenue performance reflected normal fluctuation in customer activity. During the quarter, we won several new deals, including a digital transformation award at US Federal, which we will support under a 5-year managed services agreement. We have also met important delivery milestones at Altice USA relating to the launch of the new fiber-to-the-home services under the multi-year modernization agreement we announced in September 2017. Regarding the outlook in North America, we continue to experience contrasting business conditions between AT&T and the broader region. At AT&T, we remain confident in our ability to support its future business requirements, yet it remains premature to assess the size or timing of future awards. Our fiscal 2018 outlook therefore assumes no significant shift in AT&T's discretionary spending relative to the level of Q4. It does not reflect potentially noteworthy business opportunities that may come to fruition in Time Warner. By contrast, the outlook in broader North America remains relatively strong as we leverage our position as the industry-leading partner to support the continuous digital transformation of the region's communication, pay TV, and media companies. To add to that, over the years, Amdocs has also tended to benefit from industry consolidation activity since we are the only vendor with a rich and proven track record for post-merger integration planning and execution. Along this line, we are working hard to demonstrate the additional long-term value we can bring to T-Mobile proposed merger this spring. At the moment, we continue to support the core activities of both customers, but since the merger is not yet approved, it remains difficult to predict the long-term business outcome to Amdocs, and we remind you that consolidation activity like this can create additional near-term uncertainty, which is not necessarily reflected in our outlook. To summarize North America, the long-term market fundamentals remain positive, but sequential trends may continue to fluctuate in the foreseeable future before growth resumes in a steadier way. Moving to Europe, we deliver our best quarter in more than a decade to close a strong year of double-digit growth. During Q4, we made progress in new customers in key markets where we have traditionally been underrepresented. For instance, we won our first-ever transformation award with TIM, the largest communication provider in Italy. This deal follows our previous award with Vodafone Italy and Sky Italia, and demonstrate the way in which which competitive market dynamics often compel service providers to invest and modernize. Our broader win momentum was also strong in Q4 and include the extension of existing 5-year service managed services agreement at a leading service provider in Germany. In Switzerland, Sunrise Communication extended their collaboration with Amdocs to deliver best-in-class customer service, while Post Luxembourg selected Project 202, an Amdocs company, to design a digital journey for a customer registration across its co-play finance and courier business. Regarding the outlook in Europe, the backdrop is favorable as the trends towards multi-claim convergence are intensifying. That said, we expect our growth in Europe to moderate significantly in the coming year, primarily due to the timing of new awards, the nature of ramp down of existing projects, and the macro political and foreign currency environment of the region. Turning to the rest of the world, we closed a record year with a solid quarter that includes a new 6-year deal to consolidate, modernize, and manage the IT infrastructure of PLDT with Amdocs Intelligent Operation. This significant agreement with PLDT follows the 7-year, $300 million master transformation service agreement we signed with the customer in January 2018. It is a further proof of our ability to continuously grow the footprint in markets like the Philippines. We can leverage our existing local knowledge and sophisticated IT infrastructure. Our media offerings are also proving relevant to the rest of the world. In its Argentinian division, Turner International recently selected Vindicia Cashbox to power the subscription requirements of the new cloud gaming services, Cloud. This important deal among the first of its kind for Amdocs and demonstrate the value that we can bring to groups like Turner and WarnerMedia as they look to expand globally in the emerging e-gaming and e-sports markets. Looking forward to fiscal 2018, we believe our healthy backlog and the pipeline of opportunities support another year of growth in the rest of the world, primarily led by Southeast Asia and surrounding regions where activity remains stronger as compared to Latin America. To summarize my original comments, we are pleased with our recent win momentum and activities, the mix of which is well balanced across our various business lines, customers, and geographies. Moreover, we expect continued growth ahead as we expand our core leadership around the continued digital transformation of service providers and accelerate the monetization of new business lines which are now production proven and commercially ready. These primarily include North American pay TV modernization, media and entertainment, and network software and related services, where we are positioned to capitalize on next generation investments in NFV and 5G. With this in mind, let me now turn to our financial outlook for fiscal 2019 and our priorities for revenue growth, margin performance, and capital allocation in the year ahead. First, we expect total revenue growth within the range of roughly 2% to 6% on a constant currency basis, the midpoint of which is an improvement of the pace of the prior year. The outlook is supported by the visibility of our record 12-month backlog and the stability of our revenue stream, approximately 75% of which is recurring in nature. Second, we expect non-GAAP operating margin to remain at the higher end of our future current target range of 16.5% to 17.5% in fiscal 2018, as we continue to focus on transformation project delivery, automation, innovation, and other investment necessary to sustainably accelerate our revenue growth for the long term. Third, we remain committed to the proactive and disciplined allocation of capital. We have the capacity to return the majority of normalized free cash flow to shareholders in fiscal 2019, subject to factors such as M&A, financial markets, and prevailing industry conditions. I am pleased to say this includes a proposed increase in the quarterly cash dividend for the sixth consecutive year, subject to shareholder approval in the annual general meeting in January 2019. Additionally, we retain the optionality to execute on M&A as a strategic lever for long-term growth, possibly utilizing debt where appropriate. Overall, we expect to deliver total shareholder returns in the mid to high single digits in fiscal 2019, including diluted non-GAAP earnings per share growth in the range of 3% to 7% plus our dividend yield. At this final point, I would like to highlight that our next analyst and investor day, which will be held on December 11th at the NASDAQ MarketSite headquarters in New York City Midtown. We hope that you can join Tamar, myself, and other members of our management team to hear more about the exciting dynamics we see across the global communication and media industry, our strategies and sustained growth over the new three-year financial outlook. With that, I will turn the call over to Tamar.
Thank you, Shuki. Fourth fiscal quarter revenue of $1 billion was slightly above the midpoint of our guidance range and included, as anticipated, a negative impact from foreign currency movement of approximately $5 million relative to the third quarter of fiscal 2018. Our fourth fiscal quarter non-GAAP operating margin was 17.2%, a decrease of 10 basis points compared to prior quarter, but consistent with our tracking at the higher end of our long-term target range of 16.5% to 17.5%. Below the operating line, non-GAAP net interest and other expense was $3.4 million in Q4, primarily reflecting foreign exchange movements. For forward-looking purposes, we continue to expect a non-GAAP net interest and other expense in the range of a few million dollars quarterly due to foreign currency fluctuations. Diluted non-GAAP EPS was 99 cents in Q4, above the midpoint of our guidance range of 95 to 1.00. Our non-GAAP effective tax rate of 17.1% in Q4 was at the high end of our expected annual range of 13 to 17%, but still slightly better than expected. Diluted GAAP EPS was 31 cents for the fourth fiscal quarter, below our guidance range of 71 to 79 cents, primarily due to a one-time loss of $55 million incurred to settle a previously disclosed long-running legal dispute with Vesta Corporation in the U.S. District Court in Oregon. This amount includes a settlement of $50 million plus legal fees and other associated costs of another $5 million. While we expressly denied and continue to deny any and all wrongdoing with respect to this claim, and we're ready to vigorously defend ourselves in balance and considering the relevant mitigation risks and costs, we believe it made better business sense to settle this case and mutually release each party and its respective customers with no admission of liability or fault. Normalized free cash flow was $89 million in Q4. This was comprised of cash flow from operations of approximately $115 million, less $35 million in net capital expenditures and other, and excluding payments of non-recurring charges and the multi-year development of the new campus in a total amount of $8 million. Normalized free cash flow generation for the full fiscal year 2018 was $428 million, which was below our expectations of about $500 million, primarily because of the shift of amounts due by several customers which have been collected in the first week of October. DSO of 88 days declined by 1 day, quarter over quarter. We remind you that this item may fluctuate from quarter to quarter. Total and billed receivables increased by $11 million as compared to the first fiscal quarter of 2018. Our total deferred revenue, both short and long term, decreased by $14 million sequentially in Q4. The net balance of unbilled receivables and total deferred revenue reflects our high level of transformation project activity and resulting timing differences between revenue recognition and the invoicing of customers. Our 12-month backlog was $3.36 billion at the end of the fourth fiscal quarter, which is up $30 million sequentially from the end of the prior quarter. We believe our 12-month backlog continues to serve as a good indicator of our solid book of business, and its year-over-year increase of over 3% supports our outlook for fiscal 2019. Our cash balance at the end of the fourth fiscal quarter was approximately $519 million. During the fourth quarter, we repurchased $90 million of our ordinary shares. In total, we have, as of September 30, approximately $637 million of authorized capacity for share repurchases, to be executed at the company's discretion going forward with no stated expiration date. As a reminder, you retain the flexibility to vary the level of share repurchase activity from quarter to quarter, depending on factors such as the outlook for M&A, financial markets, and prevailing industry conditions. Now, turning to our outlook, we expect revenue to be within the range of $990 million to $1.03 billion for the first fiscal quarter of 2019. Embedded within this guidance, we anticipate a negligible sequential impact from foreign currency fluctuations as compared to Q4. For the full fiscal year 2019, we expect total revenue growth to be within a range of roughly 1% to 5% as reported, and roughly 2% to 6% on a constant currency basis. After adjusting for a negative impact from foreign currency fluctuations of about 1%, relative to exchange rates prevailing at the end of our fourth quarter of fiscal 2018. We anticipate our non-GAAP operating margins to remain within the same target range of 16.5 to 17.5 in fiscal 2019. We expect our quarterly non-GAAP operating margin to fluctuate at the higher end of this range in fiscal 2019. We expect our non-GAAP effective tax rate to remain within the same target range of 13 to 17%, for the full fiscal year 2019. We expect the first fiscal quarter diluted non-GAAP EPS to be in the range of 95 cents to $1.01. And with respect to Q1, we expect our non-GAAP effective tax rate to be at above the high end of our annual target range of 13 to 17%. Our first fiscal quarter non-GAAP EPS guidance incorporates an expected average diluted share count of roughly 142 million shares, and the likelihood of a negative impact from foreign currency fluctuations in non-GAAP net interest and other expenses. We excluded the impact of incremental future share buyback activity during the first fiscal quarter, as the level of activity will depend on market conditions. For the full fiscal year, we expect to deliver diluted non-GAAP EPS growth of 3% to 7%, the midpoint of which is within the three-year range, we issued at our last analyst and investor briefing in December 2016. Additionally, our full-year EPS outlook incorporates our expected repurchase activity over the year. So, system your modeling, we expect to generate free cash flow of roughly $500 million in fiscal 2018. However, we expect normalized free cash flow of roughly $600 million in fiscal 2018, the majority of which we plan to return to shareholders through our ongoing share repurchase and dividend program. Normalized free cash flow adjusts for special items that are not typical or ongoing activities, such as the capital expenditure of roughly $50 million associated with the multi-year development of our new campus in Israel, and a cash payment of $55 million related to the settlement of the previously mentioned legal dispute. Finally, we expect the total return we deliver to shareholders will be enhanced beyond the earnings growth outlook by our dividend program, which is the new quarterly dividend rate of 28.5 cents per quarter per share is approved by shareholders at the annual meeting in January, and that would yield about 1.8% on the current share price. Therefore, we expect the sum of our diluted non-GAAP EPS growth plus the dividend yield to equate to a total shareholder return in the mid to high single digits in fiscal 2018. With that, we can turn it back to the operator to begin our question and answer session.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press the star, then the number one key on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may do so by pressing the pound key. Again, if you'd like to ask a question at this time, that's star, then one. Our first question comes from the line of Shaul Eyal with Oppenheimer. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Good afternoon, guys. Question on AT&T. You mentioned there the current inability to forecast, the growth resumption within the U.S. region. You mentioned also AT&T in that respect. Is it because of changing dynamics, or is it because of the ongoing consolidation in a way similar to what we had seen back in 2015 on the heels of the AT&T DirecTV transaction? Is it anything along these lines? Just trying to get a better understand with respect to the dynamics.
Joel, just to make it maybe clear, we're seeing a clear contrast in the demand and the trend between AT&T and the rest of North America. So while we are actually seeing a very good momentum in winning new business across the board in North America, we mentioned pay TV as a growth driver. We just mentioned the new win with new cellular around digital modernization, and there are others that we cannot provide by name. In AT&T, we are still not seeing the appetite coming back for major new investments, and therefore we are being cautious in our view and talking about relatively staying with no significant changes relative to our Q4 level exiting 2018. Now, I think some of it is definitely about prioritization and planning ahead of how they're going to move forward with broader media. Some of it may have to do with other parts of the business and how they're realigning priorities. So it's important to indicate that at the same time that we are seeing and continuing to support many activities across AT&T, across many buying centers and different type of things, we're still not seeing enough new indications coming along of investment decisions to refuel that growth that we would like to see in that account as well. But definitely the overall North American picture is a contrast between the dynamics in AT&T and the rest of the business being actually in a very positive momentum.
Thank you for that, Tamar. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to add, Shuki, that definitely the partnership with AT&T remains strong. And we don't lose any business to competition. We are at the heart of the AT&T activity. So I want to echo Tamar. I mean, obviously part of it relates to the Time Warner acquisition, but overall it's still difficult to predict.
Got it. No, this is extremely helpful, caller. Thank you for that. And maybe, I know on Vubiquity, I don't know, Tamar, if you want to disclose the contribution, or even if you're not disclosing, maybe just a word about the progress you see with Vubiquity over the course of the past few quarters.
We don't disclose the numbers, and maybe Tamar will share some, but overall what we see in Vubiquity is that traditionally Vubiquity was have a very strong success with mainly media customers. And we see an increased pipeline of all our traditional customers, from APAC to North America to Europe. Leveraging our existing partnership with our customers, that, as I mentioned before, we see major conversions to pay TV, both in Europe like in North America. So we can leverage this relationship and bring this great offering of Vubiquity. We see increasing pipeline. These deals, sometimes the sales cycle is long, but overall it looks promising.
Got it. Thank you for that, Shuki. Thank you, Tamar. I'll step aside now.
Thanks, Joe.
Our next question comes from Ashwin Shirvaikar with Citi. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Good evening. Hi, Shuki. Hi, Tamar. Shuki,
hi.
Congratulations on your first MDoc CEO call.
Thank you.
I want to go back to the specific assumptions that are in there on a full year basis. If I could, you know, starting with revenues, I understand that, you know, 4Q North America, you're assuming, 1Q, you're assuming similar to 4Q, but on a full year basis, what sort of assumptions are you making on the revenue line, and then the margin expansion that we have seen, a steady margin expansion over the last few years, would you expect that to continue? There's some uncertainty about margins versus tax since you only provided tax for only 1 quarter.
So clarification, the message around no significant change relative to Q4 is specific on our assumptions on AT&T. In general, in North America, we are seeing good momentum, as I mentioned, across the board. It's actually both in the U.S., in Canada, pay TV, wireless. We're actually seeing quite a nice level of activity. In terms of how we're looking on the margin, it's a combination between the fact we are continuing to expand into many new logos and many new countries. We gave Italy as an example. We are continuing to see very strong momentum with new logos in APAC, et cetera. And between, of course, many activities we are running to improve the margins of the performing engines of the company. We are not building on margin expansion per se as a driver this year. We would like to continue and push for growth, and we have accelerated, as you've seen, on a constant currency basis, the midpoint being at 4% relative to 2.3% on a constant currency growth of 18. We are putting a focus on acceleration of growth and grabbing the opportunity we're seeing around the world to win new business and maintain more or less the margin profile around the higher end of the 16.5 to 17.5% that is targeting. On a tax rate level, again, just to clarify, the annual basis projection is to remain at the range of 13 to 17%. Which is consistent with what we've had in fiscal 18. Specifically in Q1, the note was that we are expecting to be at higher level than that high end. But that's because, you know, we've seen volatility in tax rates between quarters before, so I don't think it's nothing to worry about. It's just giving you additional color of how we got to this specific EPS guidance on a non-GAAP basis in Q1.
Got it. And then as I think about, you had the comment on Europe, the new signings and such, would that imply that the strong European growth that we have seen in this quarter should continue?
Europe is based on many project activity relative to the, from looking on recurring revenue versus project activity. Specifically in the European region, we are still seeing a high percentage of project activity, and therefore, when we're looking on the 17% year-over-year growth of Q4, we don't believe this is sustainable moving forward, given some natural fluctuations we're seeing with projects that are ramping down, just getting to the finish line, and where new business is ramping up. But at the same time, the win rate is very healthy. We're continuing to see new wins in the backlog already, and we have also a solid pipeline. So we do believe Europe will continue to be a growth area for us. Just wanted to, set expectations at the right level for moderation relative to that strong double-digit growth we've seen in Q4.
The trend in Europe, which is now both consolidation and convergence. So you see Vodafone is buying both Cobalt Deutschland. Now they bought LGI. The same is in the UK between BT and Everything Everywhere. This consolidation and convergence activity, I think, is our sweet spot, because this is where these guys need to modernize their support system to be able to offer to the consumer market. So this is why we say that we are very optimistic about Europe.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you, Ashwin.
Our next question comes from Jackson Ader with J.P. Morgan. Your line is now open.
Great. Thank you. Good evening, everybody.
My question is, if we think about the sales efforts that when you're going after some of the emerging opportunities, let's say, like pay TV or Vubiquity, relative to your traditional markets, what does the sales effort look like when you're trying to close one of those deals? Does it require more resources, less resources, sales cycles? What does it look like?
What we do is we have, when we are leveraging the existing sales or account management people that we have today already, that are managing all our customers worldwide, and we train them to identify if our customer, for example, many of our wireless customers wants to go OTT. So every opportunity that one of these customers is in the direction of getting wants to start to deliver or distribute content, immediately it represents an opportunity for us. So what we use, traditionally what we do is leverage the existing workforce that we have that have the long-term relationship with the customer, and then we bring over all the experts from Vubiquity that can explain to the customer the value proposition. But overall, we are very, very dependent, and it's working well for us on the existing workforce or sales force.
Okay. That's actually all we had tonight. Thank you.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Tom Roderick with Stifel. Your line is now open.
Yes. Hi, Matt Van Vliet on for Tom. Thanks for taking my question. I guess looking at some of the 5G trials and potential rollouts coming down the pike here, just curious at maybe what level of involvement or projects that you've been involved with here, looking at that technology rollout and what part you could potentially play in line with some of the carriers.
So in 5G, so everyone is trying to deploy 5G. We have two angles to 5G. One is more like the network related activities. When you start to deploy 5G, you need capacity of rollout, optimization, planning, radio optimization, and many services that we have for several years that you need when you deploy 5G. So this is one area of growth that when 5G deployment we identify, we see an opportunity. The other one, and even more important, there is no rationale of deploying 5G if you cannot monetize it. The ability to monetize 5G is only if you build a capacity or ability in your IT system to get and to leverage the 5G. I can give some example. If you don't have the right charging and writing capabilities to support the new IoT, robotics, network slicing, and all this new stuff that the 5G is offering, then you are not able to monetize it. So from our perspective, as I mentioned, there are two angles. One is all the 5G rollout and deployment, and the other one to help our customer to monetize this huge investment in their support system to be able to monetize it for the new services that the 5G can offer.
And then, as you're looking at other opportunities for sort of next-gen capabilities, has there been any, or do you have any updates in terms of some of the ONAP projects that you had that you released before? Are those progressing well? And what's maybe being altered or tweaked to make that a better program?
So relates to NFV, and I want to take a moment to explain because I think NFV is only one part of our network offering. But regarding specifically to NFV or ONAP, we have a lot of proof of concept. We mentioned some proof of concept that turned to project, like in Comcast and Telstra. So while we see this proof of concept start as a very small engagement, when it turns to a project, it becomes more significant. There are many proof of concepts. It takes a little bit more time than we anticipated to turn into project as the industry is moving to NFV. But we do see some momentum that people are trying this more and more. NFV is one part of our broader network offering. Just to remind everyone that NFV is mainly around the virtualization of the network, but at the same time, we have a lot of services around the virtualization, the inventory, and the radio optimization, transition to virtual network, hybrid network operation, service assurance, autonomous service assurance. So there are many services around the network that we are now developing and successfully selling. In NFV, we are still waiting for the breakthrough, although we see some momentum mainly right now in many customers that are trying this technology in POCs.
Maybe just to add some sizing to it, we're already, I mean, with all these early phase projects, et cetera, we're already making several tens of millions of dollars around this, and we are continuing to see growth from year to year. Of course, what we're looking for is that inflection point that will make it a business of hundreds of millions of dollars, and that will take some time, but we're still very bullish about this opportunity and believe that that, in conjunction with all the services that Shuki mentioned that are quite robust, we can get our network domain to be a very important part of the overall growth story.
If we plan to present it in much more details in the Analyst Day on December 11 and to show the broader service that we do around the NV and all the other network-related services that we are offering today.
Great. Thank you.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question at this time, that's star, then one. Our next question comes from a line of Will Power with Baird. Your line is now open.
Yes, great. Thank you. I wanted to come back to North America just to make sure I'm clear. I guess, you know, given the comments around AT&T, is it the expectation that North America can, in fact, grow year over year, or does AT&T continue to pressure that? And if you expect it to grow, you know, is that cable? What are the biggest drivers of potential North American growth outside of AT&T?
It can grow, but obviously the different permutations that will be there in terms of the balance between the different accounts and the ramp-up will define exactly what's the pace of the direction that we will see. I think the good news here is that we are seeing a broad-based activity level that is healthy. Pay TV continues to be a growth driver, definitely continuing to see second, third project within the same account is penetrated, and we'll continue to see modernization happening. We mentioned also a new win in new cellular with digital modernization, so we're continuing to see also that as a driver of activities.
Another trend is that all the pay TV customers are now going wireless. Obviously, we have a good offering in this domain.
And also the different activities that we mentioned around the network software-related and service-related activities we can offer are very relevant as those kinds of investments are happening across North America. So, you know, will it end up in a material growth yet to be seen in terms of how those drivers translate into pace of revenue recognition? But in terms of, I mean, just as an indication, a significant part, for example, of the growth of the 12-month backlog this quarter came from activity of signing new deals in North America.
Okay, and then Shuki, just strategically, as you look longer term for Amdocs, you know, what are the kind of the key areas you'd like to see the company invest in for future growth opportunities, both, you know, from an organic standpoint, and I'd be curious if there's any color on how you're thinking about M&A, where are the areas you might want to invest there, and maybe, you know, what does the pipeline generally look like on that front? Thanks.
So generally speaking, I see that three main growth engines for Amdocs, and as I mentioned, we are going to talk much broadly on this in the analyst day, but all our customers are doing, one shape or other, digital transformation. And I think we have we are capable to deliver the best solution in the market in this regard. And this is true, by the way, to all regions, North America, to Europe, to APAC, to Latin America. Everyone is going digital, and I think that we have the right tools and offers. By the way, that we augmented last year with a very important very important acquisition like UXP and others to support this digital transformation. So this trend is happening, and obviously we are very well positioned. The other one is when we talk about media. So with the position of Ubiquity and also the position of that we have in regarding subscription billing and Ubiquity, I think we have a good solution for the media media and all our customers, you know, in one way or the other, either through OTT or any other pay TV offering, need these services. So I believe this will be another growth engine for us. MSO in general and all the cable and pay TV, as Tamar mentioned, was a very solid growth engine for us, and we believe it will continue to be so. This is something that traditionally was in North America. We'll see if it will happen in Europe too, because over there we see a lot of consolidation in between the pay TV, Comcast bought Sky. So there is some activity in this domain, but the majority of the activity is in North America and surprisingly in APAC. So we see this continue to be a very solid growth venture for us. Network and all network related activities accelerated by 5G would be another area that we believe we will see growth in the future. And overall, you know, I'm only 4 weeks in the job. We are looking at additional growth engines for the company. We're conducting with the company a very thorough review about what's going on in the industry and what could be other areas for Amdocs to compete and to be relevant. M&A is always something, it's a tool that Samar mentioned, is something that we will do if we think it's relevant to our offering or relevant to the market condition. So we'll do this if necessary. Sometimes it'll be technologies that we don't have or cloud services or whatever it will be. So all the time we are looking what is relevant for us and what could be added value to our offering. This is, as I said, I'm going to share on the whole management team is going to share much more details in our strategy for 2018 and looking forward for the next 3 years in our analysis.
Great, thank you.
I'm showing no further questions in queue at this time. I'd like to turn the call back to Mr. Smith for closing remarks.
Thank you, Liz, and thank you everyone for joining us this evening. We look forward to hearing from you in the coming days, and if you do have any additional questions, please give us a call at the Investor Relations line. Have a great evening, and with that, we'll conclude the call. Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation in today's conference. This concludes the program, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.